So yesterday we saw how to build Green's functions for the wave operators. And so I want to summarize the main ideas and the results, and then discuss the application to the linear vector potentials that we discussed yesterday. So what we want to solve is the wave equation, let's say for electromagnet is Milliorent gauge. This is a very concrete example. So I remind you that this is, once you fix Milliorent gauge, this is the last equation that you need to solve to fully solve Maxwell equation. So these are Maxwell, the full Maxwell equations written in one simple line. So what we did yesterday was to solve this equation for a specific, well, a pretty generic choice of J, one where you have one single particle, point particle. And once you know it for one point particle, you can take superpositions of point particles to get the most general solution. So what we did is very general, and it essentially amounts to solving electromagnetism for fixed sources. Of course, we're not studying, checking that the sources follow the equations of motion given by the Lorentz force. So we're assuming that they are, that we know their motion, and once we know the code, we can compute the corresponding thing. So this is the rule of the game. Given the mu, solve for a mu. So we ignore back reaction. So what we're assuming, to summarize, is that we are ignoring back reaction, which means if there is an electromagnetic field, this will affect the motion of the currents, but we're not checking that this is self-consistent. We're just assuming that we know it. Okay. So with these rules of the game, we can completely solve this equation. And the idea again is to solve for the Green's function of this box operator. As usual, Green's functions depend on what kind of boundary conditions you are asking from the system. And the one we studied yesterday were the retarded and advanced boundary conditions, which means instead of his boundary conditions, in this case, are initial or final conditions. On what? On phi and dt phi. Sorry, a mu. So on the field and its velocity. So maybe there was also some confusion about how to read this equation. This equation is the same equation for each component independently. So I wrote it for phi. It's like reading this equation for the zero component. So it's like looking at the component for a knot. We call that phi, and here we have rho. So each component is treated independently in this equation because it's completely linear. Okay, so with this in mind, we introduced the retarded Green function, which says that zero if, now I don't want to get it wrong. The retarded one is when a naught, y naught is larger than x naught, and vice versa. There is the advanced one, which will be the yellow. So for the yellow phase, which is much more visible. So the advanced one has, it's very similar, so the delta function is always there, but the boundary condition is when y naught is 1. So this looks a bit more than a boundary condition. It's a condition of what is happening in the past of the source x. And so it might be a bit puzzling that it's possible to find a solution of this sort, but in fact we constructed it, and we showed that g so we said that g while x was introduced this d of r for simplicity, and this d of r is naively a solution of so the way we did it was to look at this equation in Fourier. So we say that this is a delta if and only if in Fourier we get dk to be minus 1 over 2 pi to the 4th of 1 over k mu v. Of course, as we said, if we want to transform back, we need to regularize the poles of this function, and I will come back to that in a moment because that's what I want to get. But after regularization, but inverse Fourier transform requires regularization at poles. And depending on which regularization we choose to reverse this Fourier transform, we get different Green's function. So the poles are at the zero of these. So the zero of these happen when omega is plus or minus the norm of the wave vector. And depending on the way we regularize our integral in omega, if we go above or below the pole, or maybe I can do it like this, if we choose to go slightly above or slightly below, we get dr or the advanced. So what is the, how can we encode this information? It's a bit formal, but in the expression for dk. Or maybe I can give the briefly the results before, since we did this long computation. What we found was that at the end of the day, dr of x of r, sorry, is minus 1 over 2 pi t delta r mu. And for the advanced one, we get the advanced of r is same story with the opposite condition on the time. So this is supported on the past light cone instead of the future light cone. So how can we introduce the information about the position of the poles in the expression for dk? So here we want to, so let's redraw this in an equivalent manner. This is like saying we are going along, the integration contour doesn't change, we fix it along the real axis. Instead of moving the contour a little up, we can say that we moved the poles a little down. And vice versa for the green
contour. So this is now the advanced choice, and this is the retard choice. So these are anyway infinitesimal displacements. So whether we do it on the path or on the poles, it doesn't really matter. So we can say that our advanced, so instead of having omega square minus k square, let's say k mu is equal to let's put the minus here, minus k omega plus k, which are the position of the pole in this case. What we're saying is that we replace this by minus omega k plus I epsilon, and omega k plus I epsilon. So the poles are when the imaginary component of omega is infinite, is an epsilon are always positive infinitesimal, is slightly negative. So for example, this one, the pole here will be at norm of k minus I epsilon when that is zero. So this will be, this pole over here. And the other one will also be slightly in the negative half plane, imaginary half plane, which is this one. And vice versa, if we want the plus there, what we do is to put minus signs. So the advanced choice would change these signs. So we can summarize in Fourier. What we can do is to say that dr d hat retarding, we can write it in Fourier without any issue by replacing our expression k mu by this expression with the epsilon. So this will be minus 1 over 2 pi 4 1 over 1 omega square minus k square. There is no minus here. Plus 2i epsilon omega. Well, the 2 we can get rid of, it doesn't really. So how do we go from, let's write with the 2 and say why it doesn't really matter. So here we are. So you see, this is, let me do it more slowly. I don't want to confuse you. Or even necessary. So this is omega plus I epsilon square minus k square. So this is a way to write it. We can also write it in the following way. Since epsilon is an infinitesimal, at best what matters is its first order. Whatever happens to second order, we don't care. So we get omega square minus k square, which is the original piece, plus 2i epsilon omega. We could even forego the 2, because an infinitesimal or twice the infinitesimal, it doesn't matter. So this is just a formal expression that is telling us how to displace the poles. If you displace it by 2 epsilon or epsilon, it doesn't matter. Omega matters not so much in its magnitude, but in its sign. So we care about the sign of omega, so it's important that it stays there. Because this has to be positive, but this can switch sign. So by looking at this expression, we can So this is a way to encode the retarded potential in an epsilon regularization for our Fourier expression of decay. So this could be called the retarded propagator. So sometimes, just to use a language from quantum field theory, but this is exactly the same object. So this would be, this is just, don't read too much in now in this language. Is just, instead of called the Green's function is the function of y and x, maybe we can call the propagator the Fourier transform of the Green's function, and this is the retarded. The advanced version changes the sign of epsilon, moving the polar. So we can ask also, maybe this is there a differential operator that lead us to this type of expression? So remember, k squared over there is the inverse of the box operator. So we can ask, to which differential operators does this correspond? So let me just note that if I mark e to the k mu r mu gives minus k mu, e to the I k mu or mu. So this is the unregularized ring function, but in this case, we can have okay, I hope I write it in the right direction. So let's see. Box minus, so I'm writing it like, I forgot, did we put, I'm not completely sure if I'm picking the advanced or the retarded, to be honest, but the concept is the same. This depends on which signs I'm picking for the Fourier transform. But in any case, box minus 2 epsilon delta t, this will give k mu, minus 2 I omega, so sorry, this is a plus now. Do we want the plus? Yes, we want the plus, so maybe I've been lucky. Omega e to the I k mu r mu. So this is the object that I want, that I find here. So this is dk r minus 1. So we see that this propagator somehow comes from a differential operator that breaks time reversal symmetry, and this is why this thing is dies in the past and survives in the future. So I don't know how useful this expression really is, to be honest, but what I want to emphasize is that it is manifestly breaking time reversal symmetry, which is also due, we can also be seen in Fourier by the fact that here there is an omega. But like this is a bit more manifest. And this breaks and we know that these propagators and also Lorentz, but Lorentz, he doesn't really break it because what happens, as we saw, since the support of this is just a light cone, in the end the result will be Lorentz time, but it's not obvious from this expression. What is broken is time reversal, because in one case we get that dr is supported on the future light cone, and in one case the past. Now we can ask whether we can find a Green's function that doesn't have, is not breaking time reversal symmetry. And so by looking at this equation, we kind of try it's easy to guess what happened. Well, a possible ansatz for this would be to say, instead of putting time derivatives, let's not put anything. Just put epsilon here. So let's consider this possibility. So instead of the box, we replace the box with just I epsilon instead of trying to. So we want the I so that the poles are in the complex plane, like on the imaginary axis, but we don't put any time derivative or space derivative that would break symmetries. We just put epsilon. So it's like having an imaginary mass, if you want, but so in this case, what we get is that 1 over k mu is replaced by 1 over k mu plus I epsilon, which you probably have seen if you have done quantum field theory, because this is the Feynman propagator, like as much as this one is the retarded one, this will be Feynman's. So it's not how it is introduced in quantum field theory, and this does not explain why this is the right prescription in quantum field theory, but it's just a way to introduce it by just looking at this problem. Now, what does it mean for the poles? For the poles, this one can show that is maybe a 1 to minus sign. This is 1 over 2 pi to the 4 omega squared minus k squared minus I epsilon. Now I hope that my sign there is the correct one. Well, we will find out. So here, since this is always positive, it's a bit like attaching these to the k, omega check. So this is omega squared minus this expression squared, and this expression squared gives me k squared minus 2i epsilon norm of k. But here I can, whether that since the norm of k is positive times epsilon, it's a positive infinitesimal, so it's the same as epsilon. So here what we're doing is to say that epsilon is essentially equivalent to 2 epsilon k, because they're both positive infinitesimal. So we see that the two poles are at omega equal k plus I epsilon. So omega is equal to k plus I epsilon over here, and to minus k minus I epsilon. So it's like having my second pole down there. So this is k plus I epsilon, and this one is k minus k minus I epsilon. And the integration contour is just along the real axis as before. So alternatively, if we liked better the picture, the above picture over there, this is the same as putting the poles where they are and displacing the contour slightly, so here it has to go above. And there it has to go below. So I mean, which is the opposite of what I want, of course, because I picked a random epsilon for a random sign here. So anyway, either these or the opposite sign. I'll try to fix it in the notes in a way that is consistent, but the idea is the same. So this is the so again, don't trust too much my signs. I will fix them in the notes. But the idea again is that this is 2 pi over 4 k mu plus I epsilon 4, maybe minus. Okay. And this is the contour of integration that corresponds to it. So in this case, we are picking. So before, what was happening was that if the time t was positive, so we were getting no poles, and if t was negative, we were getting both poles, or vice versa, for the advanced one. Here, if t is positive, we get one, and if it is negative, we get the other. And this is how you preserve time reversal symmetry. And it also And this can also be read as saying that in the future, the Feynman propagator only contains positive frequencies, and in the past, only negative frequencies, because the omega that contributes are those, the positive omegas for t larger than zero and the negative omegas for t lower than zero. Again, the contour could be the opposite, but that's a correct result. How to write this a bit more. This can be written a bit more formally in the following way. So call I d plus r the contribution, the to the propagators given by the positive pole, like the one on the omega larger than zero pole. So you know, in all these cases, we're adding contributions from one pole at a time. So we can separate the contribution. One is I d plus r, and the other will be I d minus r. And I d minus r, blah, 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 of the omega negative. Then, we can summarize all of these results in a nice form. So we have d of r is equal to, we want time to be positive because this is the retarded one. And in that case, we get that both poles contribute. Maybe I should. Do I want to? Let me give you first another expression, which is the one that Marco was asking about yesterday. So this is that these two are related. And if you look at the formulas, this is minus T plus minus R, which is a sort of time reversal symmetry. Need to remove the I. D minus R is related to the time reversed by a minus sign, and this is also the complex conjugate.
Okay.
So it takes, this is, you can't see it by, like, it's not obvious, but it's natural that they are related because they're the same computation with some time reversed, and this is how it works. So reversing, taking the complex conjugate means reversing the sign in the Fourier transform, because that's the only source of complex numbers, and that is the same as reversing the sign of R. So this is quite clear up to a sign, which you have to figure out, but that comes up by itself. So this is how you can essentially, the two poles contribute the same up to a complex conjugation or up to some time reversal symmetry appropriately implemented. Okay, then this is where and so you will find this type of expression sometimes. So the retarded propagation is the contribution of the two poles, and so this will be D plus R minus D of minus R. So this is just the negative one. So this is the same as saying D minus of R. So this is the sum of the two poles. Same thing for the retard, for the advanced one, except that it picks them in the, for the opposite sign of t. So this is the time reversal of the r. So we're happy. And you can see this because, well, there are a bunch of minus signs, but anyway, from the result, we knew this. One is supported on the future light cone and the other on the past one, so they must be, like, from the result I wrote up there, it's clear that if I send R to minus R, the two are sent into each other. So we can also check it at the end, but also from the pole contributions, this is what one gets. Then there is the Feynman. The Feynman is this fine expression. So we get that the positive pole contributes in the future, and the negative pole contributes in the past. And this is the same as minus theta minus t d minus of r. So if you see these type of expressions with for example, in Weinberg books, they appear. So especially this one, I think he calls it delta. This, what I'm calling D plus. So this is their origin. It's just about the contributions of each pole combined in the appropriate way. So this is a useful quantity to introduce at times. So it's not adding any physics. I'm just trying to unpack certain expressions for these retarded and advanced propagator or Feynman propagators that one finds. There is one last function, which is, however, not a propagator, that appears in certain computations, which is the Pauli-Jordan, function, which is the difference of the advanced and retarded propagators. So I want now to explain its meaning. The important thing is these are all Green's functions. For different boundary conditions.
So the one for Feynman, it's a bit more mysterious, but the other two are have very clear meaning. So by Green's function, all of them satisfy the top equation there, that the box of D is delta. So this is true for all of these.
We also haven't used the fact that this is Dirichlet boundary condition, so it could be von Neumann as well.
No, these are not Dirichlet or von Neumann. These are much stronger because in the past both G and its time derivative vanish in one case and the same in the future. So this is a really different, so I think I said it at the beginning yesterday, was that the box operator is very different from the Laplacian. Although they look similar, their mathematics is extremely different. And it's all due to the minus sign in front of the time. So these type of Green's functions are very different from the Dirichlet and Neumann Green's functions. So in one case, these functions propagate, so they're called propagators because you give the data on one surface and this allows you to propagate it towards the future. Whereas the Dirichlet and Neumann Green's function are somehow extremely constrained. You fix the boundary data and they tell you how to fill in the bulk at a given instant. In a way they are, they have a, it's not that there is. Physically, they have very different roles and their mathematics is also different. Okay. So let's go back to linear figure. So for linear figure, potential corresponds to the retarded solution of this equation. So we had this box equation for A and J, for A at fixed J, and we looked at for J mu given by a point particle of course this is the history of a point particle, so moving in space-time, so again the idea was that we have some particle moving here, we are observing it from the point x. And we have, there is a certain point where it crosses the light cone. So we have that A mu r x was so let me write it in two ways. One is this one, not tau delta of x minus gamma square, and then there was u mu. Let's put it here, q u mu in a way. So these two is sitting there for its own, because of our choices of normalizations. It's not too, it's important, but I wouldn't give it too much meaning. So this is q, and u mu is the current over here, if you want. So this is u mu. And where is this current supported? Well, it is supported along the life of the particle. So this is, we're integrating over tau.
But where does A get the influence of this particle? Well, it gets it in the future. So if I'm looking at here at a certain distance from its trajectory, at this point in space-time, what I will perceive is the position of the particle in the past at this particular point. So this point here, we call it gamma at the retarded time associated to the point x. So there is a complicated equation a priori that allows you to pick the right point on the trajectory given the point of observation. What is important is that since this is moving at the speed of light, this distance, which is the retarded distance, is equal to the time elapsed between the two. So this side is equal to that. So by working out this expression, so this is telling us that x naught is in the future and not in the past of the point on the trajectory, and this is telling us that the support is on the light, so this is the intersection of the light cone in the past of gamma must be on the past light cone of x. So if we work this out, we also found that this is q u mu x mu minus gamma mu tau, where tau is evaluated at this retarded time. Now we can look at these in components, and in components, what happens? So so let's look at A0R, which by definition is our phi. Maybe I was calling it phi like this. At x. So this is the zero component, and the So what is this? This is q of, well, gamma. This is the gamma factor associated to our velocity v. But this will simplify with the gamma factor below. So in fact, I'm not even going to bother writing it. And below, we get t x0 minus gamma 0 at tau retarded times 1, so minus, plus, we get xi minus gamma 0 tau retarded at x, and here we get vi. So now we said that these two quantities are the same, and they're given by the retarded distance. So this is the same in norm as this piece. So so if we define n as the unit vector in this direction, so maybe write like this. This is the norm. So this is q over 1 minus v dot n, divided by this distance. So this is r dot v, and this is norm of r, so it can be written in this form. So this is which is the same object that I drew in the figure. And this, because it's on the light cone, this is the same as the norm. So by combining these two pieces of information, I can write it like this. And the same thing goes for the other components. So this is if I forget, if the velocity is extremely, extremely slow, let's say the thing is not moving, it's static, so we're in the static situation, we get back the Coulomb potential. If this is a straight line, its distance never changes. So the retarded distance is the same as the distance. So this is gives us back the Coulomb potential, Q over R. If it's moving, we need to do two things. There is like a redshift factor kind of thing. And then there is, we need to compute the distance in this retarded fashion instead of the instantaneous distance up here, which could be extremely different. So this is how one can interpret this equation. It gives back Coulomb, but is Coulomb corrected by the finite speed of propagation of electromagnetic waves, which is this retarded contribution, and then there is something that looks like one of these redshift factors we saw in the tutorial. But again, we saw that, okay, and if I leave you a second before. So my R is equal to Q of R minus P. So just to summarize, this is finite speed of light. And this is, when I say redshift factor is a bit vague, but there is this, it's about contractions and dilations in some sense. Because, yeah, it comes from this, what is it? Yeah, this type of contribution. So it's in some loose term is a redshift factor. So in a frame where V is zero, or used to be zero, because that V that we're computing is the V over here. In the frame in which this is at rest there, this would not appear, but it would be compensated by an appropriate Lorentz transformation, which is that kind of quantity. So that's, in that sense, this is an effect of Lorentz contraction and dilation, and so that is summarized by in this factor, which is relatively simple. And A target is the same. The same object, so this is the current. So this is the, and these are called the retarded linear vicar potentials. Just to, okay, this is not, however, the most. The most general solution for the electromagnetic field in the presence of this current, because we can always add some solution of the homogeneous equation. So we can always add some electromagnetic wave which is passing on top of whatever field is generated by the J's. So yes.
Are V and N unit vectors here?
Just a second, we have the form. A. Yes?
Are V and N unit vectors here?
V, no. N is the unit vector. Oh, N is the unit vector in the direction of r. Is the direction of this vector that here I'm picking the distance.
But v is just the trivial velocity.
Yeah, v is just the trivial velocity. Yeah, if you, before I start talking about something else, please ask. If you want, if it's a bit clearer, this is 1 over c over the retarded distance. Of course, everywhere c is just 1, so we don't keep into account, but if it helps, this is this segment, whereas this is this vector. It's the vector between xi, so this is the position xi, up to the position of gamma at the retarded time over here. So this is that vector. And this must have the same length as this segment. So that's why we can replace this covariant expression by this non-covariant looking one. Yeah.
Just to make sure, so r is the position of the particle, is that right?
Yeah, at this instant. Well, r I'm calling r the relative distance. So this is this point here is gamma I tau rx. This is gamma zero tau rx, and this is x naught. So I'm calling r the relative position, but not at the given, not at x naught, which is the instantaneous one. I need to bring it down here. So this is this distance, which is this one, is the same as x naught minus gamma naught. This figure, I should actually, okay, I should try to draw this figure and put it in the notes, because I think the one I have has less names on it, but this one probably is useful. So the most general solution in the presence of the current J, the most general electromagnetic field we can have is not given by the linear vector potential alone, which is this contribution, the retarded contribution of the current J. But it contains also here, this is a solution of the homogeneous equation. So box of A mu in is equal to 0. I can always add an arbitrary solution of that kind. Now, why am I calling it in? Do you have a guess? the next. So what happens if we go to the infinite past? Maybe a bit naively, but that's what is happening in that case. I agree that J supposedly comes from somewhere, but if we do an experiment where J, we turn on a current at some time t and switch it off at some time t prime, like by turning a switch or something, then this contribution will be vanished in the past of before we turn on the switch. So if these currents are turned on adiabatically, which we can do in a lab, then this contribution will be zero in the past. So let's do it in grad. This is A mu R, which is identically zero in the far past. If, of course, under the hypothesis that my external current is turned on and off at some time. Is switched on and on. So the idea is that in an experiment, if we want to control everything, we will have to turn on our currents and switch them off at some point and measure what comes out. So this is what was already there before we turn on the current. So that's why I'm calling it in. Vice versa, I can also write the same field. So this is inequality. I'm not forgetting anything on the right hand side. If I put the advanced one, this contribution will vanish in the future. So this is the electromagnetic field that will come out of my experiment. And remember, we were looking at how to write our solution in terms of this Green's function. I could choose final boundary condition or initial conditions. And that was a choice. There's no, the equations don't tell me which one is better than the other. So this one is like, this is my initial condition, if you want. This contains that data, and this contains my final condition. And depending on which one I'm using to integrate my equations, then I use the retarded function or the advanced function. So these are different ways of looking at the same physical situation. Is this clear? Is clear what these two equations mean and in which way they are the same and which way they are different? Like, the thing that I want to be clear is that these are two ways of looking at the same field. So this is the same A mu of x. I can write it in two possible ways. It's the same one. This provided that this J mu is something that I switch on and off at certain sometimes. Yes?
Yeah,
on the second one, is the J, is that supposed to be J mu of X?
Oh, no, this is Y. So the only difference is R, A, out, in. So in a, yeah, sorry.
But didn't, like, if you pick initial, like, boundary conditions versus final ones, only one of these two equations will be useful, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying, given a situation,
yeah,
I can pick either, and I'm free to choose.
But
and these are the two choices.
If you don't have final boundary conditions, the second equation doesn't really do anything, right?
But what does it mean to have them? Here I'm saying, if I know, so there are two possible situations. I mean, I'm sitting in a lab where I control what is coming in into my box. And so I say, oh, at the beginning, there's no incoming radiation because I'm screening it and controlling for it. Then I turn on my switch, switch off this, switch it off, and then measure the radiation that came out. So here I'm in a situation where I know A in because I can tweak it or control it or screen it, and I'm the one moving around the switch, and then the equations allow me to predict the future and say what is coming out of it. So then I look at this in the future, and I'm using the first equation to make the prediction. But if I'm an astrophysicist and I'm looking at the sky, what do I know? I know what is coming to me, and I know what has come out of a star explosion. I can't control what went in. So in that case, the useful equation would be the second one. So this is an experimental question, which one is useful. It's not a mathematical one. And maybe even in my lab, what I control is what is, in a way, what I measure is what is coming out, and what I want to predict is what went in. So, except instead of vice versa. So it depends. It depends if you are the person controlling the antenna or the person using the antenna to receive the message. You know, like if you're sending or receiving, in a sense. But the electromagnetic field is the same. And the point I want to make is that by comparing these two expressions, I can compute the contributions to the outgoing field coming from having turned on and off the source. So,
contribution to outgoing radiative A mu, which is A mu out minus A mu in.
But since these two fields are the same, this is the same as minus 4 pi d 4 y gr minus, no, I'm doing it a bit. Well, up to a sign, J mu y. So let's see. Out minus in is the first minus the second, so it should be okay. I think.
Is it right? Out.
If I bring, yeah, should be okay. Right? So this is by, I obtained this equation by saying that the two expressions for a mu are the same.
So this quantity, this difference, is called the Pauli-Jordan the Pauli-Jordan function. This is another interesting quantity that one can build out of these propagators. And if we look at the at our polology over there, what we get is that this is d plus r minus d plus minus r. But this is no propagator. This is not the Green's function. Why it's not the Green's function? Because it's the difference of two Green's functions, and therefore box, so remark, box of dpj is equal to box of d retarded minus d advanced, and this is delta minus delta, which is zero. And therefore, dpj is not the Green's function. So despite it's a cousin of them, it's not one. In fact, this is not about, this is talking about radiation, not about, well, it doesn't matter. So this quantity is the free part, is the part that solves the homogeneous equation. That's how we introduce this A in and A out. They solve the homogeneous equation, so A rad solves the homogeneous equation too. And this is related, of course, to this. Okay, so here I hope to have clarified a bit the role of these advanced and retarded ones. That is not that one is right and the other is wrong. Depends on the situation we're looking at. And even their difference has a physical meaning, which is telling us what is the contribution to the radiation field due to some sources. So here, essentially, what we're doing is to remove the Coulombic part of the field, which is the one that gives rise to these delta functions, and just looking at the radiation contribution. This concludes the chapter, so I don't know if I should change topic.
So you mentioned that the assumption we were using is that we would ignore back reaction.
Yeah.
So how would you incorporate back reaction?
Analytically, so you can do it perturbatively. So usually you need either numerical or perturbative techniques to do it. So of course that's in the context of quantum field theory and not classical theory, but Feynman diagrams essentially introduce back reaction perturbatively, right? So they, in a peculiar way, so what's in fact classically, you even if you try to include back reaction, you run into issues because a particle that is, you will see some of these exercises in the relativity course. But what happens to a particle that is accelerating? Usually it emits radiation. But if it emits radiation, it will have to slow down because it's losing energy. And so, but if its slowdown rate depends on its acceleration, then this is a third order equation.
So, and not the second order equation. So there are these, you find these weird situations when you include back reaction, and then these, and classically, so I'm not even sure that classically these equations look completely self-consistent. They, I don't want to say something wrong, so don't quote me on this one, even though. But the point is that quantum mechanically, these back reaction processes mix up with fluctuation processes due to the vacuum fluctuations, and the, like the quantum fluctuations of your fields. And these two put together make for a completely causal, well-defined system. So you also will have issues trying to define the cell, the energy of a particle together with its electromagnetic field, because it becomes divergent close to the particle. So there are classically for point particles all sorts of issues when you try to take seriously these equations and compute back reactions, energy densities, and so on, which I'm not even sure it makes complete sense to study purely classically, since we know that quantum mechanically how to make sense of that. So back reaction is these are very, very important questions that were important historically for Lorentz and so on. They were trying to study the self-energy of the electron and trying to understand what to make of it, to have models of these particles. Are they point-like? Are they extended? Then also Feynman studied it when he was a student. And so they have a big history. It's not, I don't want to dismiss the problematic.
Supposed to be an equal sign in between the a n and the minus?
No. So this is, so this is my total field. My total field is something that solves this equation. Box A mu is equal to minus 4 pi J mu. So how do I find the most general solution of this equation? I find a special solution for the one with sources and add an arbitrary solution without sources. One possible choice of solution with sources is this retarded potential. This is what we proved yesterday, that if we want to solve this equation, inverting this box, we can write these Green's functions and so on and so forth. Now, this is a solution of the one with sources, but then we can add an arbitrary homogeneous solution, an arbitrary solution of the homogeneous equation on top. And now, since this is a general fact, so this A mu will always be some A mu free, let's say, plus A mu source, and this A mu source is the integral in Y of some Green's function of Y. So this type of structure is generic, and this is solving A mu equals zero, and this is solving box A source equal 4 pi J. And the general solution is a combination of the two. Now, for this specific choice of Green's function, I can even give an interpretation to this A mu. Since this is the retarded Green function and vanishes in the past, what I know is that in the past, I only have this contribution if J vanishes sometime in the past. So that's why I'm talking about switching it on and off. So the situation is, this is my support of J. This is time, this is space. So I have A in, and in the future here I have A in plus A retarded plus AR of J. Let's say that depends on J. Vice versa, if I'm doing using the advanced, I would write the same type of equation, but with the time flip, right? The same type of. So, but A mu is the same, is a solution of that equation, except that for the retarded potential, I can encode the influence of these currents into the future of the source, and in the other case, it will come in the past. But what I'm trying to emphasize is that although this seems causally natural, it's just about what we know and what we don't know. So in one case, we assume that we know what's coming in, and then we compute the influence of the sources on what is coming out. In the other case, we know what is coming out, maybe because we measure it, and we want to know what was there before by subtracting the influence of the sources.
Yeah, and we want to subtract A in because A in is like the background, the waves that were propagating
before
the start
yeah.
of our experiment,
yeah.
and then we
yes.
remove to have only radiation caused by J.
Yeah. So, this is, A out minus A in is this, is the radiation caused by J.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Is something like the self-energy of the electron even physical in like a theory which cannot create particles or something like that?
Sorry?
So if I have a theory which like cannot even change particle number, is like something like the self-energy of the electron physical? Like if I cannot like utilize this energy to like...
Well, you can... Since the electron must be propagating with its Coulombic field, it cannot get rid of it. And this Coulombic field carries energy, you might wonder whether it contributes to the mass of the electron, to the inertial mass. So in that sense, it's a, you can start wondering what this mass is, why it's not infinite, for example.
The second chalkboard, if omega is larger than zero, then does it mean the retarded region?
In which drawing, sir?
In the Feynman propagator.
Yes.
Thing, the right hand side. If omega is greater than zero, does it mean the retarded region, or not necessarily?
So in let me write it here. We wrote yesterday that dr is equal to 1 over 2 pi or integral in the wave vector kr integral in d omega of omega squared minus k squared e to the minus e omega t. And we notice that to make sense of this integral, since it goes across two poles, we need to say where we pass relative to these poles. So this is
maybe I write it in a more explicit manner, like this, times that. So we have a pole here and a pole there. This is omega, this is k, and this is minus k. Oops. The minus goes on, of course. Now, a priori, there are three possible, well, four possible ways of going around them. Either I go above both, below both, or I alternate. Now, this would be different prescription for these. They all give rise to a Green's function, but they have different, if you want, boundary like past-future properties. So if I go above, I obtain the retarded propagator. And this is because when t is negative in this case, that exponential tells me that I need to close above. So this is always the case. For t negative, we need to close up. So maybe that's the best way to present this. So let's do it a bit differently. So this is my omega plane, real omega, imaginary omega. So this is, and for t positive, t negative, So t negative, I need to close towards the top because of the sign of this exponential over here. And for t positive, I always need to close towards the bottom. So in the sense that these arches do not contribute to to the integral because they are exponentially suppressed, and so I can always, if I have a path going down here, I can for free close it towards the top or towards the bottom, depending on the sign of t. Oh. But then this allows me to have a closed contour, and when you have a closed contour, integration contour on the complex plane, there is a nice formula that tells you that the result of this very complicated integral is summarized by something computed at the two poles, or at the one pole that is encircled in it. So if I take the solution, the up solution, for t negative, I'm enclosing no pole. So this is the retarded solution. So for t negative, there is no pole, and therefore it gives zero in the past. Whereas in the future, I get the sum over the two poles. So here, I know that dr with the red prescription will give 0 in t less than 0. And the residue of this function, well, and will give d plus r plus d minus r for t positive. So I get the sum of the two pole contribution. So what I'm calling the pole contribution is a small circle going around here in anticlockwise fashion. So when I go down, I'm picking, in fact, these two with the opposite sign. Well, this is going clockwise, so probably there should be minus signs. Okay, so I'm picking both of them, but I'm encircling them in the clockwise way, so I get minus signs. Now, if I choose the bottom, the below the pole's contour, I get the opposite result. So if I pick this type of contour here, this is the advanced contour, and what I get is that is automatically zero now for t positive, and for t negative,
now I'm encircling the two poles in the right orientation, so this would be d plus r, d minus r, 14 negative. Now it turns out that this r is quadratic in R, so some it doesn't matter. So in what I wrote before, it was also correct. Now, the Feynman one slaloms across the two, and so it will pick the negative pole. Let's see, probably it got, well, maybe, no, I think it's wrong. So it should go like this. So it gets the negative pole when t is negative. So we have negative frequencies. So that's kind of the complex conjugate of the Feynman one, the one I ended up drawing, unfortunately. But so if I'm going like this, slaloming across, I get a Feynman. And this is d plus d minus r when t is negative, and d plus r when t is positive. And I need to check their orientation. So the negative one is in the right orientation, and this one is in the wrong. So there is even a sign. So by knowing what these little circles are, this is d plus. This little circle is the contribution of d plus. This little circle is the contribution of d minus. I can summarize all my results like that. Then these are not very explicit, so I have to do anyway the big computations we did yesterday to find out what these look like. But I can also decide to compute only this guy over here and then deduce the others by.
Okay. And you can flip d plus to d minus when there's time symmetry, is that right? Time
if I look at the integrals that defines it, so, well, these integrals are the residues of, well, is the integral of these is the contribution to this integral of the positive pole of these or the negative pole of these. If you write them down, you see that there is a relation like the one I wrote there. So the negative contribution is the complex conjugate of the positive one, essentially.
Okay.
So, and this is because by flipping, so what is it? If I write it in terms of R mu, I don't see it. Did I write it anywhere? Maybe not. So if you go back, you see that it is, changing the sign of R mu is the same as changing the sign of K, essentially. So it's like flipping, switching from one to the other somehow.
Okay.
Well, if you look at the expression, it's not. If you come see me, we can look at the formulas, and one can see that there are these symmetries. So the two are not completely different functions. They're the same functions with some signs flipped, essentially. Thanks.